A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's trying to digitize everything he can, which I respect. But he also knows there are some things you just need paper for. Registration certificates, tax documents, that kind of thing. He's got a household with a kid, a small business on the side, and he wants to avoid what he calls folder sprawl. He's asking for a recommended list of folders, what categories actually earn their keep, and what stationery to get. Herman, this feels like exactly your kind of question.
It really is. And I want to say up front, the fact that he's asking this before he has a filing cabinet full of 47 overlapping folders, that's already better than most people. Folder sprawl is real, and it's not just messy. It's actually a security problem. When you can't find what you need quickly, you end up keeping everything just in case, and then your sensitive documents are scattered across a dozen places instead of one locked drawer.
The filing equivalent of, I'll just put this somewhere safe, and then never seeing it again.
So let's build this from the ground up. I'm going to give you a folder list that covers a household with a child and a small business. And I'm going to be opinionated about it, because the whole point is avoiding bloat. Then we'll talk stationery, which I have thoughts about.
Of course you do.
So the principle I use comes from a paper by organizational researchers at Princeton. They studied home information management and found that the sweet spot for retrievability is between 7 and 12 top-level categories. Fewer than 7 and you're stuffing unrelated things together. More than 12 and people start forgetting where they filed things. So I'm aiming for roughly 10 folders total with clear subgroupings inside them where needed.
10 folders for a whole life. That's ambitious.
It is, but it works if you're disciplined about what goes where. Here's the list. Folder 1, tax documents. This is the heavy lifter. Current year only. Everything else gets archived to a long-term storage box that lives somewhere else, not in your active drawer. Inside this folder, you've got subsections for income records, deduction receipts, charitable giving, and the previous year's filed return as a reference. The moment you file your taxes, you pull everything out, put it in a large envelope with the year written on it, and move it to the archive. The folder resets for the new year.
The active tax folder is always thin. The archives are the fat ones.
And I recommend keeping 7 years of archives. The IRS audit window is generally 3 years, but it extends to 6 if you underreport by more than 25%, and indefinitely for fraud. 7 years covers you for everything short of fraud, which I'm assuming we're not doing.
Bold assumption in a small business context, but go on.
Folder 2, Banking and Investments. This covers checking accounts, savings accounts, brokerage statements, retirement accounts, and any certificates of deposit. One folder with tab dividers separating each institution. You keep the most recent statement for each account, plus any account opening documents. When the new statement arrives, the old one gets shredded. You don't need a running history in your active files, your bank has that.
What about the monthly statements versus the annual summaries?
Keep the annual summary, shred the monthlies. Unless you're reconciling something specific, the month-to-month detail is noise. Folder 3, credit cards. Same principle, one folder, dividers for each card, most recent statement only. But here's a thing most people miss. Keep a single sheet in the front with the card issuer's customer service number and the last 4 digits of each card. If your wallet gets stolen, you have one place to look.
That is genuinely useful. I've done the frantic wallet loss scramble, and it's not dignified.
Nobody's dignified digging through a trash can looking for a canceled card. Folder 4, insurance. This gets its own folder because when you need it fast. Home or renter's insurance, auto insurance, life insurance, health insurance, any business liability policy. Keep the full policy document plus the declarations page, that's the summary sheet with your coverage limits and deductibles. The declarations page is what you'll actually reach for 90% of the time.
If you have a kid, presumably health insurance paperwork multiplies.
It does, and this is where I'd put a subdivider just for medical. Explanation of benefit statements, vaccination records, anything that might need to be referenced quickly. Which brings me to folder 5, Medical records. Separate from insurance, this is the actual health history. One section per family member. Keep immunization records, major test results, specialist referrals, and a running list of medications with dosages. If you ever end up in an emergency room with a child who can't answer questions, having this folder accessible is not just convenient, it's important.
I'm picturing you in full pediatrician mode, arms crossed, nodding at the medication list.
I've seen too many parents trying to remember dosages from memory at 2 in the morning. It's not a good system. Folder 6, Vital Documents. This is your permanent identity folder. Birth certificates, marriage license, social security cards, passports, military discharge papers if applicable, citizenship or naturalization documents, and adoption records. These don't cycle out. They live here forever. This folder should be in a fireproof container if possible, or at minimum in a sealed plastic bag inside the folder to protect against water damage.
A sealed plastic bag. That's the kind of detail people skip and then regret.
Water damage destroys more home documents than fire does. Sprinkler systems, burst pipes, a roof leak you didn't catch. A simple zip-top bag is worth more than any fancy filing system. Folder 7, Home and Property. This covers your lease or mortgage documents, property tax records, home improvement receipts, appliance warranties, and any survey or title documents. If you own your home, keep the closing documents. If you rent, keep every lease renewal. The subcategory here that people forget is the home inventory, a simple list of major possessions with estimated values and, ideally, photos. If you ever file a claim, that inventory is the difference between a smooth process and a nightmare.
I feel like most people don't do the home inventory until after they've been burned.
It's one of those things that feels paranoid until it suddenly doesn't. Folder 8, Vehicle Records. Title or loan documents, registration, maintenance records, and any accident or repair history. If you have multiple vehicles, one divider per vehicle. The maintenance log is the thing people neglect, but if you ever sell the car privately, a complete service history adds real value.
If you're like me and you've never sold a car because you're a sloth and you don't drive, you can skip this one.
You don't drive, you don't have a car, you don't have a driver's license. I'm honestly not sure why you're in this conversation.
And I'm enjoying the folder taxonomy.
Folder 9, Education and Child Records. This is for report cards, IEP documents if applicable, school enrollment forms, extracurricular registrations, and any correspondence with schools that matters. Also put college savings account statements in here, a 529 plan or similar, one section per child. If you have multiple kids, you might need a folder per child eventually, but for most households with one or two kids, a single folder with dividers works fine. Folder 10 is the business folder, but I want to be careful here. This is not your full business filing system. If you're running a real small business, that's a separate cabinet. This folder is for the overlap zone between household and business. Your business license, your EIN letter from the IRS, your assumed name certificate if you're doing business as something other than your legal name, your seller's permit, and a summary of business insurance. It's the prove I'm a legitimate business folder, not the run my business folder.
That distinction matters. Otherwise, the business eats the household system.
And that's how folder sprawl starts. You let one category colonize everything else, so that's 10 folders. Tax documents, banking and investments, credit cards, insurance, medical records, vital documents, home and property, vehicle records, education and child records, and business essentials. If you want an 11th, I'd add an estate planning folder. Wills, trusts, power of attorney, advanced healthcare directives. That can live inside vital documents, but it's weighty enough to justify its own space, especially if you have dependents.
10 to 11 folders. And the archive box for old tax returns lives somewhere else entirely.
The archive box is not in your active drawer. It's in a closet, a basement, somewhere you access once a year. If it's in the drawer, you'll keep adding to it, and suddenly you have 27 folders and you've recreated the problem.
I want to push on something. You mentioned shredding old statements. What about the argument that digital backups make paper redundant and we should just scan everything and toss the originals?
I'd say scan everything, but keep the originals for the vital documents and anything with a raised seal or wet signature. A scanned birth certificate is not a birth certificate. Government agencies and banks will ask for the original or a certified copy. For tax returns, the IRS accepts digital copies of most supporting documents, but having the paper originals of your W-2s and 1099s is still good practice. The hybrid approach is the right one. Digitize for searchability and backup, keep paper for legal enforceability.
The argument that scanning everything is a form of procrastination disguised as organization?
That's real. I've seen people spend 6 hours scanning old utility bills from 2018 while their current insurance policy is expired and unfiled. The scanning project can become the thing you do instead of actually organizing. My rule is, file the paper first, scan later if you want. The filing system has to work today.
All right, let's talk stationery. What are we buying?
I have strong opinions here, and I'm going to try to keep them reasonable. First, the folders themselves. Get heavy-duty hanging folders with a reinforced edge, the kind with a metal strip along the bottom and a plastic tab slot at the top. Not the basic paper ones that tear after 6 months of use. The brand that consistently tests well for durability is Pendaflex, specifically their SureHook line. The hooks are reinforced with a polyester laminate so they don't rip when the drawer is overstuffed. A box of 25 will run you about $15 to $20 and you'll use maybe 12 of them.
I know you have a tab opinion.
Get the clear plastic tabs, not the paper ones. Paper tabs yellow and tear. Clear tabs last forever. And position them in a single straight line, either all left or all right, not staggered. Staggered tabs are a relic of the era when people needed to see every folder name at a glance from across the room. In a home filing drawer, you're standing right in front of it. Single position tabs look cleaner and make it easier to add folders later without rearranging everything.
The single position tab argument is the kind of detail that makes me glad you're the one answering this question.
I contain multitudes of filing opinions. Next, the file folders that go inside the hanging folders. These are the manila folders that actually hold the paper. I recommend third cut tabs. That's the kind where the tab extends across roughly a third of the top edge, in a neutral color. Manila is fine, but if you want to color code, this is where you do it, not on the hanging folders. Color code the interior folders by category. Green for financial, red for medical, blue for legal, whatever system makes sense to you. The hanging folders stay standard green. The interior folders do the signaling.
The drawer looks uniform from above, but when you pull a folder out, the color tells you what domain you're in.
It's visually calm but functionally useful. Do not handwrite labels. Your handwriting is fine, my handwriting is fine, but 6 months from now, when you're squinting at something you scrawled at 11 p.m., you will regret it. Get a basic label maker. The Brother P-Touch series is the standard. The PTD210 is about $30 and prints laminated labels that don't fade or peel. White tape with black text. No decorative fonts, no Comic Sans, no clip art.
Comic Sans on a tax folder would be a cry for help.
It would, and I would, and I would answer that cry with a referral. For fasteners, I recommend two-prong fasteners for the interior folders, the metal prongs that go through the punched holes in the paper. Not the three-ring binder kind, the simple two-prong kind that lets you secure a stack of papers at the top. These are essential for medical records and legal documents where you don't want pages getting out of order. A box of 100 costs about $8 and will last you a decade.
What about those black binder clips everyone seems to love?
Binder clips are great for temporary stacks, the pile of receipts you haven't processed yet, the contract you're reviewing, but they're not for permanent filing. They add bulk, they catch on other folders, and they're a sign that something hasn't been properly filed yet. A stack held together with a binder clip is a task, not a record. File the paper, lose the clip.
A stack held together with a binder clip is a task, not a record. That's going on a mug somewhere.
I should sell those. All right, the drawer itself. If you don't have a filing drawer built into a desk, get a standalone filing cabinet. Not a plastic file box, not a portable file tote, not a decorative filing crate. A metal two-drawer vertical cabinet. The kind that weighs 40 pounds empty. It's fire-resistant enough to give you time to grab the vital documents folder in an emergency, and it locks. Not a serious lock. Any filing cabinet lock can be defeated with a screwdriver. But it keeps curious children out, and it signals these are not casual papers.
It anchors the whole system. You can't shove a metal filing cabinet into a closet and forget about it the way you can with a portable box.
The physical presence of the cabinet is part of the system. It says this matters. Now, the one thing I haven't mentioned is a shredder. If you're going to keep paper, you also need to dispose of paper securely. Get a cross-cut shredder, not a strip-cut one. Strip-cut shredders turn your bank statement into ribbons that a determined 12-year-old could reassemble in an afternoon. Cross-cut turns it into confetti. The Amazon Basics 12-sheet cross-cut is about $50, and it's perfectly adequate for home use.
12 sheets at once feels like overkill for home use.
It's not about volume, it's about not jamming. A shredder rated for 12 sheets will handle 6 without complaint. A shredder rated for 6 sheets will jam on 4 if they're folded. Always buy more shredder than you think you need.
That's the kind of life advice this podcast was built on. Alright, so we've got our tin folders, our hanging folders with clear single position tabs, our color-coded interior folders, our label maker, our two-prong fasteners, our metal filing cabinet, and our cross-cut shredder. What about the stuff that doesn't fit neatly into folders? The passports, the birth certificates, the things that are small and irreplaceable.
Not a safe deposit box at a bank. Those are fine, but you can't get to them at 2 a.m. when you realize your passport is expired and your flight is at 6. A small fireproof safe that bolts to the floor or a wall stud. The Sentry Safe 1200 series is the standard recommendation. It's rated for half an hour at 1550 degrees Fahrenheit and it's waterproof. About $60 to $80. That's where the vital documents folder lives, plus passports, spare car keys, a backup hard drive, and a small amount of cash.
The safe is inside the locked filing cabinet?
The filing cabinet is for everyday access documents. The safe is for the things you hope to never need in a hurry. They serve different purposes.
Let me throw a curveball at you. Daniel mentioned a small business. What about receipts? Business expenses, home office deductions, the shoebox of crumpled paper that haunts every freelancer.
The shoebox is the enemy. Here's what I recommend instead, a single accordion folder, not in the filing cabinet, that lives on your desk or in a drawer you can reach from your chair. 12 pockets, one per month. Every receipt goes into the current month's pocket. At the end of the month, you spend 15 minutes, literally 15 minutes, sorting that pocket into broad categories, office supplies, travel, meals, equipment, software subscriptions. Staple the sorted receipts to a sheet of paper with the month and category written at the top, and put that in a single business receipts envelope in your tax folder. The accordion folder resets for the next month.
The sorting happens monthly, not annually in a panic.
The annual receipt panic is a form of self-inflicted injury that affects roughly 80% of freelancers, and I'm making that number up, but I'm confident it's directionally correct.
I've watched Daniel do taxes, and there's a certain thousand-yard stare that appears around receipt sorting time.
The monthly method eliminates that. It's boring for 15 minutes a month instead of traumatic for 6 hours once a year. Now, I want to address something about the folder list I gave. I said 10 folders, but the real number for any given household will vary. A single person without kids might need 7. A family with 3 kids, a rental property, and 2 businesses might need 15. The principle isn't the exact number. It's that every folder has to earn its place by containing documents you actually need to retrieve. If you have a folder you haven't opened in 2 years and it's not vital documents, it's probably unnecessary.
The Marie Kondo of filing.
I'll take that. But the difference is that with filing, the spark joy test doesn't work. A tax folder will never spark joy. The test is, would not having this document cause me a concrete problem? If the answer is no, it doesn't need to be in the active filing system.
What about digital organization alongside the paper? You mentioned hybrid earlier. Is there a digital folder structure that mirrors the paper one?
Yes, and I'd recommend mirroring it exactly. Same 10 folder names on your computer or cloud storage. If you scan a document, it goes into the corresponding digital folder with a consistent naming convention, year, month, date, underscore, description. So, 2026-06-11 underscore auto insurance declarations. That naming convention sorts chronologically by default, which is what you want 90% of the time.
The PDFs of the scanned documents. Do you keep those forever?
Storage is cheap. The cost of keeping a scanned bank statement from 2014 is effectively zero. The cost of not having it when the IRS asks a question is potentially very high. So yes, I keep scans indefinitely. The paper gets shredded after the retention period, but the digital copy stays.
I want to circle back to something you said about the label maker. You're very firm on the no handwriting rule, but there's something satisfying about a handwritten label, isn't there? It feels personal.
It feels personal until you're trying to read it while holding a crying child and looking for a vaccination record. Then it feels like a mistake. The label maker isn't about aesthetics. It's about legibility under pressure. When you're stressed, when the light is bad, when you're in a hurry, you want the folder name to be instantly readable. Printed labels do that. Handwriting doesn't.
All right, I'm convinced. But I'm going to push back on something else. You've described a system that's very 10 folders, dividers, color coding, label maker, shredder, safe, accordion file, monthly receipt sorting. For someone starting from zero, this is a lot of setup. What's the minimum viable version? If Daniel only has an afternoon, what does he actually need to do?
Minimum viable version, in order. First, gather every piece of paper in the house into one pile. Every drawer, every envelope, every stack on the kitchen counter. Second, sort into two piles, need to keep, and shred or recycle. If you can get it again from a website or a customer service line, you don't need to keep it. Third, separate need to keep into the 10 categories. Fourth, put each category into a labeled folder. Fifth, put the folders in a drawer or a box. That's it. No fancy stationery yet. No color coding. No label maker. Manila folders and a Sharpie. You can upgrade to the full system over time. The sorting is the non-negotiable part. Everything else is optimization.
The core skill is the triage, not the shopping.
And the triage is the part people skip because it's unpleasant. It's much more fun to buy a label maker than to sort through 2 years of unopened bank statements. But the label maker doesn't organize your papers. It just makes your disorganization look neater.
That's a brutal truth. The label maker doesn't organize your papers. You're on a roll with the quotable lines today.
I've thought about this a lot. Filing systems are one of those things where people confuse the tools with the outcome. Having a beautiful filing system doesn't mean you're organized. Being able to find any document in under 60 seconds means you're organized. The system is just the means.
Let's talk about the kid angle specifically, because Daniel mentioned having a child. What changes when you add a small human to the filing system?
First, the volume of medical paperwork increases by roughly 300%, and it's time-sensitive. Vaccination schedules, well-child visit summaries, school physical forms, these have deadlines attached. The medical folder needs to be the most accessible one in the drawer. Second, you start accumulating artwork and school projects that don't fit in any folder. This is not a filing problem. This is a separate category that needs its own container. A large flat portfolio or an underbed storage box. Do not try to file construction paper in a manila folder. It will end badly.
The dreaded macaroni art bulge.
Third, and this is the one people don't think about, you need to be able to explain your filing system to someone else. If you're incapacitated, if you're traveling, if a grandparent is watching the child and needs to find an insurance card, your system has to be legible to a person who didn't design it. That means clear labels, consistent categories, and ideally a one-page cheat sheet taped to the inside of the filing drawer that says where everything is.
A filing system's user manual. That's both deeply nerdy and practical.
It takes 5 minutes to write, and it could save someone an hour of frantic searching. I consider it essential.
What about the small business side? You said the business folder in the home system is just the legitimacy documents. Where does the actual business filing live?
Separate cabinet, separate system. But with the same principles. The business needs its own set of folders, probably 8 to 12 depending on the complexity. Client contracts, vendor agreements, business tax records, payroll if you have employees, intellectual property, marketing and branding assets, business banking, and insurance. The categories are different, but the logic is identical. One folder per purpose, no sprawl, clear labels, regular purging.
If the business is just one person, a sole proprietor working from home, does it still need a separate cabinet?
Not necessarily a separate cabinet, but definitely a separate drawer. The key is that business and personal documents should not intermingle. If you get audited, you don't want the auditor flipping through your personal medical records while looking for business expense receipts. Keep them physically separate. A two-drawer cabinet with personal on top and business on bottom works perfectly.
That's a good line to draw. All right, I want to ask about something that's been in the back of my mind. You've laid out this system, and it's clean and logical, but filing systems have a way of decaying over time. You set them up, you're diligent for 3 months, and then life happens and suddenly there's a stack of unfiled papers on top of the cabinet. How do you prevent the slow slide back in the chaos?
The inbox problem. Every filing system needs an inbox, a single designated place where new paper lands before it's processed. The mistake is treating the inbox as a storage location. It's not. It's a way station. The rule is, the inbox must be empty at least once a week. Every Sunday evening, you spend 10 minutes processing everything in the inbox. File it, shred it, or act on it. If you do this weekly, the stack never gets intimidating. If you skip a month, you're back to the giant pile on the kitchen counter.
The system lives or dies on the weekly processing habit.
And I recommend making it as painless as possible. Put the shredder next to the filing cabinet. Keep the label maker plugged in and loaded. Remove every friction point between this paper exists and this paper is filed. If filing something requires walking to another room, finding a step stool, and digging out a label cartridge, you won't do it. Make it effortless, or as close to effortless as a donkey can reasonably expect.
A donkey who has clearly optimized his own filing workflow to an alarming degree.
I have a very organized study, and I'm proud of it.
I've seen it. It's unsettling. The manila folders are color-coded by a system I don't fully understand, and there's a label on the label maker itself.
The label maker is labeled label maker. It's logical.
It's recursive is what it is. All right. Before we wrap, I want to go back to something you said about the fireproof safe. You recommended bolting it down. Why is that important?
Because a small safe that isn't bolted down is just a convenient carrying case for a burglar. A 15-pound safe with a handle is the easiest thing in your house to steal. They don't even need to open it. They just take the whole thing and figure it out later. Bolting it to the floor or a wall stud means they'd need tools and time, which most burglars don't have. It's not impregnable, but it changes the calculation from grab and go to not worth the effort.
The fire rating, you said half an hour at 1550 degrees. Is that enough?
For most house fires, yes. The average room fire reaches peak temperature in about 10 to 15 minutes, and the fire department's response time in most urban and suburban areas is under 10 minutes. A half hour rating gives you a solid margin. If you live somewhere very rural with a volunteer fire department that might take longer, look for a 1 hour rating. But for most people, half an hour is sufficient. The waterproofing is arguably more important. Fire hoses put out an enormous amount of water, and a safe that survives the fire but floods is not helping you.
Waterproofing is the unsung hero of document protection.
Water is the quiet destroyer. People prepare for fire and forget about floods, burst pipes, and the aforementioned fire hoses.
To summarize for anyone listening who wants to set this up, 10 folders covering tax, banking, credit cards, insurance, medical, vital documents, home and property, vehicles, education, and business essentials. Maybe an 11th for estate planning. Heavy-duty hanging folders with clear tabs in a single position, color-coded interior folders, printed labels, not handwriting, two-prong fasteners for permanent stacks, a metal-locking filing cabinet, a cross-cut shredder, a fireproof waterproof safe for the irreplaceable stuff, an accordion folder for monthly receipt triage, and a weekly habit of processing the inbox.
That's the system. It's not complicated, it's not expensive in the grand scheme of things. Maybe $200 to $300 all in if you're starting from scratch, and it will save you dozens of hours of searching and panicking over the years.
The maintenance is 10 minutes a week plus 15 minutes a month for receipts. That's less time than most people spend looking for things they've misplaced.
The system pays for itself in avoided frustration almost immediately. And there's a psychological benefit, too. Knowing exactly where your important documents are. Knowing that if something happens, you can put your hands on the right paper in under a minute. That reduces a low-level background anxiety that most people don't even notice until it's gone.
The ambient stress of mild disorganization. It's real. I feel calmer just hearing you describe the system, and I don't even have any documents.
You have a birth certificate somewhere.
I maintain it's in Mongolia.
Of course you do.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1980s, the traditional practice of cooking in hollowed-out giant clamshells on the island of Tabatuea in Kiribati nearly vanished after overharvesting of the Tridacna gigas clam led to a local extinction. The technique was rediscovered in the early 2000s when a marine conservation program successfully reintroduced the species, and an elder named Teberenga taught a new generation how to cure the shells for use as cooking vessels.
I have so many questions about clamshell cookware, and I'm going to ask none of them.
The phrase, cure the shells, is doing a lot of work there.
All right, here's the thought I want to leave people with. Filing systems are not really about paper. They're about the moments when you need the paper. The emergency room visit, the insurance claim, the tax audit, the lost passport 2 days before a trip. Those moments are already stressful. A good filing system doesn't prevent them, but it removes one layer of panic from the equation. And sometimes that's the difference between a bad day and a catastrophe.
The system is an investment in your future self's sanity. Your future self is going through something hard. Be kind to them. Label the folders.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for the fact and the production. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It actually helps. Find us at myweirdprompts.com. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. File something today.
Preferably not me.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.